podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C., where we all hope doing what is right the first time is everyone's top priority. This is Software Quality Today, presented by Procellarex, a podcast about the trends and challenges of software quality testing and computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. Hear interviews with special guests and news from customers and vendors. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez Acevedo, and welcome to today's episode.
Thanks for joining us for a new episode of Software Quality Today. On today's show, Dori welcomes Natalie Kaminsky, and amongst other things, they chat about Natalie's path from QA tester to CEO of a technology company and how her background in QA shaped her approach to launching and running a software development company. With more than 20 years of experience in the technology industry, Natalie is a dynamic and resourceful web and mobile technology entrepreneur, and she is the CEO and founder of Jet Rockets, a custom software, web, and mobile application development company. She's also the co-founder of OneTribe, an HR management platform for hybrid and remote teams. She currently lives in Brooklyn with her husband and two daughters. And now, let's go ahead and jump into the show.
All right. Well, welcome, Natalie, to Software Quality Today. It's so good to see you.
Very good to see you and be here. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So, as we, you know, described in the bumper, you are the co-founder and CEO of Jet Rockets, and Natalie is also a member of Chief. And so I'm really excited to have you here today. I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey and how you came to running your own software development firm.
Yes, well, thank you. It's a bit of a long journey, so sit tight, you know, I'll take you through it. I kind of fell into the tech industry back in 1998. It was hot time because, you know, we were on the precipice of the end of the world.
That's
Y2K, if you remember.
That's right. Yeah. And, well, that's when I started my career too. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, it was so easy to get into tech. Like all you had to do was, you know, just apply for a job and claim you knew how to do something within tech and you had a job, right? So I was a recent high school graduate. I just moved from Israel to the United States. I ended up in Minneapolis of all places. And I was desperate for a job that would pay me whatever minimum wage it was at that time, you know? And I met some people kind of closer to my age, and everyone was working within the IT. And I said, oh, okay, that sounds like it's a good place for me to go to. So let me try that. And I, at first I got a job as a programmer, and, that was, you know, we can bypass that story, but for about 6 months, I was rewriting a database table from dealing with two digits to dealing with four digits. And at the end of that experience, I learned two things about myself. I was not a programmer.
Good information.
Yes. But I really got excited about tech. And I was like, oh my God, you know, you can use these amazing tools. You can write software that really solves real business issues, life issues, can really make your life easier. And so I wanted to learn more. And I, you know, came across this opportunity to try myself out as a QA quality assurance tester. And I jumped on it and I was fascinated with the field. You know, to many back then, it sounded like, oh, you were just not good enough of a programmer. That's why you went into testing.
Yeah. But not many people say that's intriguing to them to start.
Yes. Right. It's like, but the truth of the matter, I was fascinated by the nuance, the details, the level of, you know, attention that you have to pay in order to do your job well. And so I joined a small company out in Minneapolis. At that time, it was called SWAT Solutions, which stood for Software Automation Testing Solution. And I was really, you know, I was really fortunate because the owner of the company, Steve Timmerman, thank you, Steve, took a chance on me, and he gave me this job and he put me to work and to learn the skill, really to learn. And he taught me very well. You know, I joined a project working for a company called Guidant Corporations, which they did pacemakers. You know, they made pacemakers and other, I guess, devices for healthcare devices. And I had to test this very incredibly important piece of software. So to me, being part of the team, mm-hmm. really knowing that I was contributing to a very important piece of, you know, this product. And I had to do my job super well because, I mean, lives were literally on the line. Mm-hmm. I was super happy. And so fast forward, I spent 3 to 4 years growing into the software development role. And I've learned, you know, I got certified as a quality assurance engineer. I've learned black box testing, white box testing, automation. Like mm-hmm. I've done everything you can within the software development testing. And then I naturally started to move into sort of business analysis, project management, and other roles over the next 10 years. And after a decade spent as a software development professional, I felt that I was ready to go out on my own and kind of, you know, apply all those skills and see what else I could do. And I've always had this entrepreneurial streak to my mm-hmm. personality. Just, you know, I always wanted to be my own boss, you know. Yep. It sounds very romantic, right? Everyone wants to be their own boss until you know what it entails.
Exactly. All the gray hair that come with it. I'm attesting to that.
Yeah. But the truth of the matter is once you go over to that side, it's very difficult to go back.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, for the past 14 years, I've been a co-founder and a CEO of a company called Jet Rockets, and we develop custom software, web, and mobile applications. And we focus on helping companies large and small with a specific niche, working with non-tech founders, helping them launch their tech platforms, you know, and make their dreams come true. And I truly believe that my background in software testing has really contributed to helping Jet Rockets stand, you know, create its own niche and really be unique in the way and the type of service that we provide. Mm-hmm. So that's my story.
That's awesome. So I think that what intrigues me most about the story and how you've come to be now is in relationship to non-tech founders or non-tech, you know, folks that want to do tech but don't necessarily have that technical background. And I see that similarly in life sciences, where we have quality people, like big, you know, we quality is a general word, right? But from your background, software quality is very different than quality assurance or quality control in other realms. And trying to relate or have conversation between those two kind of roles can often be difficult and challenging, and cross-talking with terminology with one another. And I wonder, how do you handle that in terms of having these conversations with non-technical folks about technical things?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. It takes, you know, it took us years to learn how to do it properly, right? And I think quality is all-encompassing, right? And so the way we view quality is that quality control, quality assurance has to start from the very first day. Like the day we get the lead, the day we introduce ourselves to a potential client, mm-hmm. everything has to go through that filter of quality, right? Are we communicating clearly? Because clear mm-hmm. communication, especially when dealing with non-tech founders, is key, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't want to make assumptions. I don't want to use terminology that they don't understand. And oftentimes, non-tech founders, they feel a little bit self-conscious about it. So mm-hmm. they're not going to readily admit to not understanding what you're saying, which then leads to, you know, miscommunications and, you know, problems down the road. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very, very clear about communication. You have to be very clear about the expectations that mm-hmm. our clients have and how to manage those expectations and how to educate them along the way using this filter of quality at all and every step of the way, right? So at Jet Rockets, we've developed this sort of almost like repeatable process that we go through, right? We want to make sure that when we speak to potential clients, we want to make sure that they first and foremost know what is the problem that they're trying to solve. Because many people try to get into startup world because it's sexy, it's exciting, you know? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want to call themselves a startup founder?
Right, right. So, yeah.
and then raise millions of dollars, become a unicorn, and right. you know, retire somewhere on the Bahamas. That's, well, that doesn't happen very too often, but it's the story that the media tells. Right. So it's very, you know, it's appealing to many people, and so we start really the quality control at that very first meeting. My first question is like, what, you know, tell me about your product. Mm-hmm. I'm interviewing the client as much as they're interviewing me.
Right.
I want to know that they thought this through. I want to know that they have a valid business idea. I want to know that they have a go-to-market strategy that they've already started thinking about even before
they have
building
the technology.
The product.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because every step of the way has to be done with such meticulous detail and attention to quality because, you know, it's oftentimes it's their life savings involved, their time, the resources they put in. You know, I don't want these clients to walk away disappointed with a feeling of, oh, you know, it's another software development company that took my money and didn't build what I wanted. And now I'm back to square one.
Right. So let's talk about that. What is the problem to solve? What are you solving, right? Like, because that is ultimately what software does, right? It solves some problem, whether it's a business problem, a technical problem. It solves some gap that, and that is why someone wants to buy stuff, right? We have all these add-ons and plugins and all this stuff to a lot of standard software out there, right? It's all over the place. But each try to find its own unique, what added value am I bringing to the table? What is the problem that you're trying to solve? So can you talk me through that and how to help someone really define that statement, or what are some of the pitfalls that you see when they try to do that or not do that well, and how can we help them?
Yes, I think that often the biggest issue where people fail the most, from my experience and from the founders we worked with, is, you know, you identify a problem, you see a problem that's happening in your daily life, right? And it could be work-related. And oftentimes it is. I mean, most of the founders we work with, they come out of, let's say, corporate world.
Right.
You know, let's say maybe they've worked in the legal industry for many, many years, and they know the industry inside out. And for years, they've been using Excel spreadsheet to track their, I don't know, billable hours, whatever. And I'm just making this up, right? Yeah. Or actually, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be making this up. Maybe let me tell you a real story using a real client.
All right. Great.
Yes, because so we have a client. Her name is Rachel West, and she's phenomenal. I love her very much. And her company is called Safari Portal. So what Rachel wanted to do, and prior to founding Safari Portal, Rachel was and still is an owner of a very boutique, high-end Safari travel agency. And during COVID, of course, when business went down, you know, unlike many of her competitors, Rachel decided to act, right? And Rachel said, what is a problem that I can solve within my industry that could potentially set me up for success when this pandemic is over? And she came up with this brilliant solution. You know, one of the problems of her industry was lack of a software product that allows you to put together beautiful, dynamic, custom itineraries. I mean, remember, she sells very, you know, expensive trips. You want that experience to feel unique. And, you know, most people in her industry have relied on, you know, Word and PDF files. That doesn't feel very unique to someone who is willing to pay tens of thousands of dollars to go on safari.
Right.
So, you know, so Rachel came up with a solution. And the reason that she was so successful and she is so successful in her business is because she was solving a real problem that she herself knew has existed on the market. She tried many times to find a solution to that problem by using various products that are available on the market. And each time she failed. So inadvertently, through those activities, she had completed her market research. So she knew that nothing like this exists on the market. She knew all the advantages and the disadvantages of existing platforms. So she came to me with a very clear problem-solution statement. She knew exactly who her target audience was going to be once her product was ready to go to market. And she knew exactly how she's going to sell it. She was set up for success every step of the way.
That is really important when I translate that, right, and how the pivoting happened and how the articulation and the research happened. When I translate that to my vertical and life sciences and the audience that often listen to what we're talking about today, it's like drilling down into where and what is the most important in order to drive the biggest upturn in whether market share, drug purchase, clinical trial efficacy, like all of those things, right? And it's, you know, there's so many things out on the market already. There's so many products out on the market, but the internal IP of some of the big life science companies and biotech companies, right, is where the real differentiator is for each and every one of them. And so being able to pivot like that and constantly evolve is really hard for large organizations. I can imagine it'd be small for her, given it's a small thing. How do we translate that to big organizations where the machines behind the curtains, if you will, are much larger? Do you have any thoughts around that?
I do. And I think the key thought really is to have each department or even each team within the department to function a little bit more like a startup. You know, to have that freedom. But with the freedom comes and should come accountability, right? And at Jet Rockets, we do have experience working with larger corporations as well. We had a few clients in the past and still have a few clients who would be considered, you know, large companies. And one thing that we see oftentimes is that lack of accountability because, you know, working for a large corporation, you are a middle manager. Yes, you have your projects, you have your deliverables, but your livelihood is not on the line.
Right. Yes.
For the most part.
It's very interesting. It is super true, right? The urgency is not there, right? And the lack of moving up or down or momentum within the middle managers is often very, very hard to navigate. So you gotta push, right? And so that is challenging. And why I try very hard to use some of the principles when you talk like definition of done in terms of agile, right? And,
yeah.
You know, just as a general term, not necessarily in software development, but what is done really well look like at the end? And what are we trying to accomplish, right? And if we can try to hone in on that intentionality of where is the added value of what are we going to do on a day-to-day basis, helps us able to pivot too, right? Because then you can take like a couple different scenarios and say, okay, well, this one's a lot more risky than this one and we should focus over here versus there, right? But if we're not able to pivot well with a clear definition or a clear communication of why, I suspect, I know from my experience that that's where often the derailment happens, right? Because then there's too many balls in the air and not enough focus on what really matters.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, to your point, I mean, if you think about where all the innovation comes from, for the most part, it's small businesses, right?
Yeah,
it's the small market, like it's small companies, it's startups. And if you think back to like, let's say when Airbnb became a thing,
right?
It was, you know, a couple of kids, more or less, and not like some big Hilton corporation that came up with that particular innovation.
Yeah.
Because these large companies take, you know, I think it almost feels like they have a lot more, on the one hand, they have a lot more to lose. And so sometimes they are kind of like slow to move and they don't want to undertake additional risks. And when, you know, that's part of the reason why I love working with our set of clients who are small, just starting out, startups. Oftentimes they, you know, while they have a lot to lose, they also don't have a choice. You know, if they want to succeed.
Right. And then that really, you know, to your point of when, if larger companies broke this up into smaller groups, right, where there's some independence in innovation. And, you know, when we saw a trend a couple of years ago where, again, in the big pharma, life science, there was small pockets of digital health and digital innovation and trying to get movement within the larger framework. And it's kind of like when you're scouting for a new drug, right? And you do an analysis on a bunch of different molecules or target molecules, right? And you want to be able to cast that net wide enough to be able to get the next blockbuster, right? When we're talking about in the digital space, it's the same thing, right? But you need that space to innovate, right? And try some different stuff and do that market research like you talk about. Like, how is it going to translate? How is it going to make added value? And then be able to hone in on what's the ones to move forward in the pipeline, right? Essentially. And so what I'm seeing is that there's, while we have, you know, large life science companies making awesome products and great innovation from a drug perspective, there's this underlying operational foundation that also needs to innovate as fast as possible. I know digital transformation is one of your passions as well. And so I was wondering if you had any thoughts around what you're seeing in digital transformation today and how we may be able to do better.
Well, I think, again, I think it all goes back to accountability and freedom to fail.
Ah,
I think oftentimes,
I like that term. Yep.
Right? I mean, like, you can't expect people to innovate if you don't allow for any level of mistakes to be made.
Right.
And so, and some companies, you know, let's say Google, are better in that than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think, especially when, you know, when you take into consideration current market or, you know, economic situation, right, mm-hmm. in our country and around the world, people are probably afraid to lose their jobs, right? People don't want to make mistakes. People prefer to maintain status quo and be like, okay, let me sit this one out. You know,
right.
Hopefully I can sit through whatever comes down, must come up. So we should be okay at some point soon, I hope. Right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Again, I'm not
just ride the wave and it'll eventually come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But meanwhile, while you ride the wave, the ones that are really swimming outpace you so fast. Right. And so it is calculated. And as you know, as a CEO and as you're as a CEO, that we're constantly looking at 2, 3, 4 steps ahead. And if we take that analogy to the small kind of pocket way of working within larger organizations, those leaders also taking that very, very far distant look of what are the trends. And I know we, even within Chief, we talk a lot and we've been doing a lot of work in internal meetings, right, around AI and machine learning and how is this impacting leaders and what do we need to do in order to start preparing for and what are the risks around it and what can we predict and what can't we predict of where we want to move forward in that. And at the same time, I think what you said around the ability and the culture of failure is super important in related to your earlier comments around software quality assurance, that nothing is bug-free, right?
Nothing is bug-free. But that's okay. And we have to accept that reality, you know?
Right.
We shouldn't be striving for perfection, you know? Even being, you know, coming out of QA and having a very QA-oriented mindset, I always say we cannot strive for perfection. I mean, it's a well-known fact that perfection is the killer of good, right? So, We have to take calculated risks. We have to accept that a certain level of failure is okay, and it's part of the progress. If we don't make mistakes, we don't grow, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you think about kids, and before they learn to walk, they fall so many times, and they
right.
get up and continue running, right? And that's incredible. Like, this is all around us. But quickly going back to sort of, you know, I really am a big proponent and a big believer in small self-managed teams,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is, and I mean, I know Jet Rockets
could small. Be code for agile. Let's just be clear,
yeah, right?
That is terminology that folks in the software world will talk about. But if you literally just say those words, it applies to everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the way we run things at Jet Rockets is we, for every project that we work on, we create a self-managed team that comprises just of the team members that should be on the team. We don't have any middle management within Jet Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
I You know, and I understand that Jet Rocket is just a 65-person company as opposed to some huge conglomerates of thousands of 10,000 employees. And of course, at certain point, you do require middle management, but there should be still
an essence of you know, in touch points and connectedness to that, right?
Absolutely.
And I suspect you as the CEO also have tendrils in there, right? While your teams are self-sufficient and built to be self-sufficient, it's not that you don't know what's going on.
Oh, I am, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I am, you know, still battling my control.
So I often refer to myself as a recovering perfectionist and recovering control freak, right? Like those things that when you become at a certain level of leadership, you really need to stop doing each and every day and be a conscious effort to not do that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I have one, you know, admission to make is every morning with my morning coffee, one of my most favorite things to do is to read through every Slack channel we have in the company. And again, I don't read it for details, but I kind of scan through it because I want to know what's going on. And 99% of the time, you know, that gives me enough information so that if a client were to call me up and wanted to chat about their progress or about their project, I would know what to say. And I think it's important, you know, and it goes hand in hand with quality.
Absolutely.
Because when clients come to work with me, they, you know, I give them my word. I give them my reputation, you know, on the line. I tell them, look, I guarantee that we're going to do a good job for you.
Right.
So I have to know what's going on. It doesn't mean that I have to participate in a daily operation and be tactical. Absolutely not. I don't do any daily, you know, routine tasks or any such thing. But I do need to know enough to be able to be proactive, to interject if I think, if I believe things aren't going the right way. And, you know, I used to interject a lot more often than I do now.
Right.
And I think it's evidence that one, self-managed teams do work. It just requires time for everyone to be okay with the accountability. You know, everyone loves freedom, but not everyone understands and realizes and is willing to accept the fact that freedom comes with accountability.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you get that? Because I think that, so that's one of my, I often refer to it as my quality tea. Let's come have some trust, education, and accountability. And if everyone can sign up for those three parts of the quality process, you know, and have common understanding around those three things, what are those things and how do we instill them? The hardest, I think, is accountability. You know, trust builds over time. That's kind of gut intuition. Folks can feel that or not. You can often have them articulate that pretty well. Education, it's, you know, trainings, it's, you know, involvement, those sorts of tangible things. But accountability, how do you define it? And what are some of the things and how do you put that into place?
So I define accountability very simply as being an adult professional and wanting to do your job well. That's
so simple. I love it.
You know, and I definitely, you know, having right people in the right seats helped.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you think being a small business owner influences that? Because, I mean, you know, when we hire as a small business owner, right, when we hire, we really look for that as a characteristic of a, for me at least, it's a fundamental. Like if I don't have folks that can fit that bill exactly in the simplest terms as you just said it, they don't fit within the organization.
But how do you scan for that during a course of, I don't know, a couple of interviews, right? It's very difficult.
It's very,
because
very hard.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's one of the, I think it's a universal struggle, right? So, and it's almost always a shot in the dark. So you take a chance on the person that seems to be fitting the bill. What we do at Jet Rockets is, you know, we try to communicate our values, and we have five values at Jet Rockets that really drive every single decision that we make around personnel, and not just personnel, actually around everything that we do. And those values are results, And what it really means is, you know, yes, we need to produce results, and we need to be truthful, and we need to be, you know, on task, right? Then continuous improvement, which means that you constantly need to look for ways to do better, mm-hmm. right? Learn, expand your skill set. Collaboration, mm-hmm. which again, very self-explanatory. We mm-hmm. want to make sure that you work well with a team, and not just your internal team, but, you know, the client's team.
Right.
Transparency. Mm-hmm. Super important for us to be transparent and to talk about issues as they arise and not try and hide things. But, mm-hmm. you know, be truthful. Like I said, I'm okay with mistakes being made. What I'm not okay with is with mistakes being hidden.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I will always give a second chance to a person who made the mistake and came forward and said, look, I messed up. Mm-hmm. I need help.
Right.
I will never give a second chance to a person who made a mistake, tried to conceal it, and then ended up, you know, causing an even bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And a final and probably the most important value is efficiency. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by efficiency is that, you know, especially in software development, there's always new technologies mm-hmm. that everybody wants to try. They're sexy, they're mm-hmm. exciting, you know, mm-hmm. let us try AI, right? Like whatever. But at JetRockets, we believe that in order to develop or deliver results and, you know, of high quality and on time, we really need to use reliable tools that we have worked with in the past many times, and they have proven them to be good and reliable and, you know, stable.
Right.
And so in our case, whenever there is any problem, any, you know, software related issue, and there's always more than one way to solve it, we always want to solve it the easiest, the simplest, the most efficient way. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I mention all those five values right now is because when you look at all those five values together, they lead to accountability, at least in my company, mm-hmm. right? So if you collaborate, if you're transparent, if you produce results, if you, you know, constantly looking to improve yourself, and if you're trying to be as efficient as possible, you're accountable. And so that's how we, you know, we, that's the performance reviews that we do within the organization, the hiring, the firing, the, you know, award decisions are made mm-hmm. based on these five values. And we, it's, you know, it's important to communicate those values, not just on your website, like many companies do, because it's good for marketing, but actually to drive them deep into the heads of your employees. So. Yeah. We talk about these values at all times. We have our quarterly meetings where we remind everyone about the values, and mm-hmm. we also bring specific examples. Mm-hmm. Let's say if we have an unfortunate situation that we need to part ways with an employee, which sometimes happens, we make sure to very clearly explain why and what exact value that employee did not meet.
Mm. Interesting. Does this extend to your customers as well?
Yes.
Because, you know, one of the things I've seen change pretty dramatically, in my opinion, since COVID, right, is this, this over expectation and unrealistic, I should say, expectations from some customers these days in not only what they want, when they want it, how they want it.
How much of it they want.
How much of they want, you know, how, you know, even though it may not be technically possible, they want it anyway, and for free, by the way, right? Not paid for, right? So that is bubbling up. And I know from a workforce perspective, that adds a tremendous amount of additional mental burden on consultants, right? And so
absolutely.
I was wondering how you relate your understanding and how you apply accountability also to your customers.
Oh, Dori, what a timely question and issue you bring up. We actually, just yesterday, we had a very lengthy conversation about this very topic with a colleague of mine. But yes, I absolutely agree with you, especially now in this, you know, very economically unstable situation, we definitely, you know, we want to make sure our clients are happy. I mean, don't get me wrong. We want to make sure our clients are happy in any economic situation. But, you know, right. now especially, we cannot afford, you know, right. any issues. So it's very difficult to, you know, this dance, you know, make this dance and toe the line between keeping some boundaries with mm-hmm. your client, but at the same time, providing the best service possible. Right. And so what I think, again, it goes back to quality, because I think that if the team is able to develop from the get-go, from the very first interaction with the client, if the team is able to develop open and honest and transparent relationship with the client, mm-hmm. where the client really views themselves as the extension of the team mm-hmm. and the team as the extension of their business, mm-hmm. that's where those things become less of an issue. Because, you know, we have situations where my team makes mistakes. Of course, I mean, we're all humans.
Right.
And we have very concrete examples where a client is okay with that. You know, a mistake is being made. We're being open and transparent and being saying, you know what, we made the mistake. This is our plan to fix the mistake. This is what's happening right now, you know. And the client is typically, okay, no problem. I understand. Mm-hmm. Moving on. And unfortunately, we also had situations where, you know, we weren't successful at building this relationship. And so every little thing mm-hmm. becomes a huge issue.
Right.
And every little thing becomes a point of contention. And every little thing becomes, oh, I want more. I want more. Give me more for right. free. And right. now. Right. And, you know, now we're going back to that infamous circle of yep. fast, high quality, and cheap, right? You can yep. only have two.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
But it's a huge issue. And I think just honing in, at least at JetRock, it's honing in on those values of open communication, focus on results, collaborative approach, continuous improvement, and really being as efficient as possible helps us, if not avoid, then minimize this mm-hmm. you know, unrealistic expectations and the desire to squeeze out as much as possible out of, you know, poor consultants. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's a, it really is. I think they having that you said towing the line, and I think that's a really accurate sort of, you know, description of, and and more recently, I'm thinking about it in terms of boundaries, right? Of, and relationships, right? Boundaries and relationships and how that extends to the customer and service provider, right? And in this more complicated IT tech world, right? We have more interdependence on multiple providers at the same time in order to even provide a single service, right? And so that complex web that we have created, while it, you know, it used to be like just in the supply chain, right? Where it's all these inputs, outputs that are now on top of that, you have all the complicated systems that are on top of that and interconnected as well. And it's very hard for us as we go in and try to produce an understanding of a framework of where is your risks, where do you need to spend focus of time, where in your digital platform or your computerized system is most vulnerable, right? When there is so much input output and based on relationships, not just the digital technology underlying it. Because at the end of the day, people still forget. Have to remind them all the time. A SaaS product is great, but a SaaS product behind the scenes is a lot of people.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and that is what you're paying for when you pay for as a subscription model is actually a ton of people keeping the yeah. lights on in a variety of different ways. Some do that better than others, more operationally efficient than others in their or economy of scale. So you see different prices depending on the scale of that efficiency, right? But it's still at the end of the day, a combination of technology and people together.
And people is still the most important factor, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Fortunately.
I mean, yeah. you know, we all do business with people we like, right?
Right.
And it goes yep. without saying. I always say that And funny, again, it ties back to quality because, yeah, you know, it's so much, it's easy to switch up. And I always say this, it's easy to change a vendor. It's almost impossible to change a partner.
Yeah. Right? I like personally have undergo lots of different changes in the last couple of years, and it's made, you know, my life very complicated. And at the same time, you're spot on, right? Because you've also established, you know, for an industry, regardless of which one you're talking about, there's expectations out there. There are norms out there that folks have been accustomed to and want to experience because there's, you know, so-and-so company has been doing it X, Y in this sort of way for, and then you have the new entry into the sphere, and do they do it the same way? No. Right. But they might have a better product, but they do it in a different way, or, you know, and it ties back to what is the quality of what they're actually saying that they're delivering or not delivering, or what can you do or not do with that piece of software or that system? Right. I think it has gotten more complicated, and I know we've talked to, I think you've been on some of the calls within Chief around the AI and machine learning stuff. It's, yeah, you know, really trying to take that first level mental burden off of the people that we're talking about right now, right? That are doing the work on a daily basis, and what can we automate and get to a point where then that kind of first level, like if you think about it in a sport model, right, that first level stuff is just automated for you, right? And so that you can get to the deeper level, you know, relationship questions, deep level of like, what does it really mean? Refining those user stories, understanding what the definition of done, like getting to the richness of all of that while we can put aside some of the more routine or standard common ways of doing things that should be universal in some level, at least, again, back to your definition of accountability for professionals, right? Like, okay, this is a professional kind of thing. And we're not someone talking about coming right out of school or something like that.
Right. And because it's, you know, it's all based on experience, and you have to, they don't teach this. Like you can't learn school how to deal with an upset client because, right, they don't teach that. And yeah, it's not something you can learn from books, right? I mean, school is very important, don't get me wrong, but you know, I personally, when making hiring decisions for Jet Rockets, I don't care about the education level of a person. That's the last thing I actually care about.
What do you look for?
Cultural fit, most and foremost. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that any technical skill can be taught. Mm-hmm. And we have proven over and over and over again, you know, our A players within our team are people who joined us, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, coming out of, you know, whatever, coming out of universities at times, sometimes just out of nowhere, very little experience, but lots of fire, eagerness to work, eagerness to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And actually, really, that quality that, you know, people who do what they really want to do are not capable of not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Because they take a lot of pride in their work.
Yeah. I love that.
That's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, I want them. Look, I always say, you know, when Jet Rockets was founded, the whole idea behind this was to build a company that I, along with my co-founders, ourselves, would want to work for if we ever were employees. So it's like, right, you know, what kind of company are we building? A company where we want to work.
Yeah.
And so it has always been about, you know, work-life balance, about quality, about excitement, about taking on challenging work. And so it's very important for us to find the right cultural fit. And, you know, sometimes we're successful, other times we're not. And because it's very, very difficult to scan and kind of to really understand the person based on just a few interactions through Zoom most of the time nowadays, right? So, yes, we've been toying around with various personality tests. But honestly, they don't work for us, because even within my leadership team, we're all so different.
Right. You know? Right. Well, one of the things, it's interesting, as you were sharing, I'm reflecting on, it's often, whether or not we're being evaluated to be, brought on as a service provider, right? Like, do you have experience in X, right? Mm-hmm. And there's often this criteria of, regulations or this or that one wants to make sure that you have experience in. But actually, how you've described JetRockets and my underlying philosophy as well, right? If you can learn and continue to question and do that critical thinking well, it doesn't matter the what of what you're building or what the business use case or the vertical that you're in, right? Because it's those skills that you're articulating that are the critical part of a team function. On, we can find out all that information. Absolutely. We can do all that stuff. Like, your point of, you can learn all that tech stuff, right? But it's how to apply that and how to make meaning of it ultimately solve the problem that you're trying to solve. So at the end of the day, it's problem solving.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's this desire to be good, mm-hmm. At what you do. That is something inherent, and it's personal, and mm-hmm. It's part of a person's nature. Mm-hmm. And not everyone is like that, and that's okay. We essentially at JetRockets, we hire for either engineering, project management, or QA. So those are the three main roles that we have. And of course, while the requirements or kind of the expectations are slightly different across the board, there is this overarching requirement that I want people who are self-starters. I want people who are willing to, suggest ideas. I want people who are not afraid to make mistakes. That's important. Mm-hmm. I want people who, at the same time, care for the quality of their work. Mm-hmm. If you're PM, if you're QA, if you're engineer, I want you to take pride in your work, because if you don't, then this is not the right place for you.
Mm-hmm. So what does it look like when, at JetRockets, when folks don't agree?
They don't agree. Oh, you mean like an argument within the team or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. What does that look like?
I believe, it depends, right? we oftentimes have screaming matches, mm-hmm.
Right.
But that's good. Like the way I think it's like when people are passionate and people mm-hmm. want to get their point across and mm-hmm. people really want to make sure that they're being heard. And of course, I'm exaggerating a bit when I say screaming matches, but we often have very passionate, fiery discussions, but at the end of the day, we don't leave the room until we all come to a solution. Now, of course, compromise is not always possible, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. sometimes somebody has to make a decision, right? Yep. And that's why we do have, people who are, every team, the way we build our teams, every team has a project manager whose job really is to coordinate with the client and coordinate the team activities and to make sure everything is done on time and on budget and according to the plan. Mm-hmm. We typically have a tech lead, someone who will be the tie-breaking in such cases. Mm-hmm. Someone who will listen to all the sides and be like, okay, you know what? If we all cannot come to an agreement, I'm going to make a decision. Mm-hmm. So, and the process, we run on EOS. I don't know mm-hmm. if you're familiar with EOS. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, we have all these level 10 meetings and then issue ideas, mm-hmm. Solution processes, etc. So we really learn as we go. Mm-hmm. But I got to say that as we grow as a company, as we grow as individuals, we become better and better at it. So it's experience, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So to your earlier point, it's not something they can teach us in school. It
right.
comes with experience.
No, exactly. And what you've also described is, while we were talking earlier around boundaries between customers and the service provider, within the team, you've also established clear roles and responsibilities and boundaries and what those hats look like, right?
Yeah,
and
we try.
What people are coming on. board.
Absolutely. So, you know, we have a number of team members who are more experienced and who mm-hmm. have more skills and more knowledge than others. And we make it absolutely clear that these people's virtual doors are always open for mm-hmm. any discussion. We actually have several Slack channels dedicated to education and kind of experience share and knowledge sharing. And mm-hmm. We encourage people to ask questions and to engage others even outside of their projects. So mm-hmm. that's why I always say to our clients, you know, one of the benefits of working with us is even you may have a small team assigned to your project, but in fact, you're getting the knowledge of everyone in the team.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's great. Yeah. It's, what do you think is the next steps for Jet Rockets as you guys are looking forward?
Yeah. Well, we want to continue and grow. Our goal really is to help as many non-tech founders launch their tech platforms as we can. And we are taking on certain, you know, we're starting to engage in certain activities around that. For instance, we are about to publish our ebook on okay. launching a tech platform as a non-tech as a first-time non-tech founder. Mm-hmm. We also have several initiatives that will be announced shortly regarding a new thing called JR Ventures. And by the way, this is the first time I mentioned it out in public.
Okay.
Well, it's going to be a semi-venture studio that we're going to launch within Jet Rockets, so that's exciting. And our first cohort will be focused on female founders.
Awesome. I love that.
Absolutely.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Well, you know, that could be a whole separate topic for a podcast, but
yes.
female founders, especially non-tech female founders, have a whole other set of problems to worry about when it comes mm-hmm. to launching, you know, a tech startup.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds wonderful. And I'm really excited for you as you're continuing to grow there and bringing a perspective today that I think is really important to everyone, and that quality is by design from the very, very beginning, right? And if we all could do that, like what better products in general that we could have if it wasn't seen as a overburden or something that should be done after the fact, but yet embraced from the very, very beginning. So thanks for that, Natalie.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Absolutely. We'll have you back again another time.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today. If you like what you just heard, we hope you pass along our web address, procellarx.co, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and check us out on LinkedIn at ProcellarX. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.